Okay, good morning, everyone. It's 10 o'clock. It's a pleasure to be here with you this morning and a great schuss. And I'm very excited to be able to join this awesome, awesome project, at least for the summer. So it's Parshas Nasa. We're going to be doing the first Sicha. And if at any time you want to say something or ask something, please, please just unmute yourself and let your voices be heard. So we're going to go straight to the Sicha. And the Rebbe says in Eis Aleph, in the very first part, Kimedubar kama pa'amim, as has been spoken many times, Haklal shehatera hi nitzchis, the axiom, the rule, that the Torah is eternal, betakfai hu b'nogeya l'chol hatera chula, remains strong and firm in relation to every single part of the Torah. So if you look at this week's Parsha, there's just a lot of themes and a lot of things going on, and some of which, you know, we might think, oh, we could really learn lessons from this. We can glean important insights. But some of it we might be like, okay, this is boring. There's nothing really here. There's nothing really that speaks to me, that relates to me, and so on and so forth. So the Rebbe sets down this rule that every single part of the Torah is nitzchis, is eternal, and has lessons for us and guides us, and more than just guides us and has lessons. And here, just going to, for a few moments, talk about the fact that this is one of the distinguishing aspects of the Rebbe's Torah, that he took the very well-known teaching in the Zohar that God looked into the Torah and created the world, which many, many great teachers cited and referenced and spoke of and repeated. But for the Rebbe, it meant something different. It meant that it meant more than the Torah is the truth. It meant that the Torah is the truth about this world, that there's nothing about this world that is in any way or can in any way be disconnected from the Torah. So that the Rebbe wrote in many times that if something seems to be at odds with the Torah, you have to go back and look at it carefully, because since the Torah is the root of that thing, since the Torah is the source of that thing, it can't be that the world should in any way impede what the Torah wants to happen. Okay, this is a very, very axiomatic, it's a very yesodistic, it's a basic idea in the Rebbe's Torah, that it's more than that, like the Torah informs how we live and inspires us and guides us, and you know, it's the anchor of our faith community and whatever you want to say. For the Rebbe, it meant that there can't be any divide, there can't be any fissure, there can't be any dissonance, there's no lack of calibration between the Torah and every aspect of the world. And this is something that we could talk about for a very, very long time. This expressed itself in many, many different ways. But the Rebbe wrote, like, even if there's an aspect of the world that can be used and is used in many negative ways, but we have to remember that the etzem, that the essence of the thing was created by the Torah and for the Torah and for the covet of the Torah and for the glory of Hashem. And so this goes for embracing the internet and every other aspect of technology and so on and so forth. But this is a recurring theme throughout the Rebbe's Torah, that you can't separate the world from the Torah, because the world was created as an outgrowth of the Torah and is in complete sync with it at all times. So the Rebbe says, this is true, gam ha'inyonim shebeter asher begashmias einam bizmanenu. This is true about the things in the Torah that even physically, they are not relevant in our time. But still, nimtzaim heim gam achshav beruchniyosam. But they are found today just as surely as when it was true thousands of years ago, spiritually. And then the Rebbe adds in the brackets, "Vahari haruchnius himokar v'sherish hagashmius." And this again is an axiomatic idea that everything that we look at, everything that we see, everything that we have, everything that we relate to, everything that exists in the physical, material, corporeal world is a pale reflection of the spiritual reality. The spiritual reality is where this begins. It's what nourishes the reality that we relate to. And so it is with what is said in our parsha, which like I said, you have the Isha Sota, you have the Nazir. There's just so much going on in our parsha. But at the beginning of the parsha, you have Minyan Bnei Gershon Bnei Merari. You have the census that was taken of the children of Gershon and the children of Merari. And you also actually have the beginning of this census. The census, the Minyan B'nai Kahas, the children of Kahas, were counted at the end of last week's Parsha. So the beginning of the counting of the children of B'nai Kahas is at the end of last week's Parsha, and then it finishes up in the beginning of our Parsha. And it's not a very scintillating part of the Parsha. It's not stuff that people are going to go to the podium and speak about. I mean, it's a census, you know. It tells you the names of the people, the names of the family, and how many people there were in this family. And you look at this and you're like, okay, what am I supposed to learn from this? But the Rebbe asserts, Sha'af begashmius eina inyan nitzchi, even though physically speaking, practically speaking, this doesn't seem to be eternal. Shahaya hatziboy limanoisam bahaminyan atzmei rak pam achas b'shana hashenis letzeisam eretz Mitzrayim, because the commandment to count them, right? The hatziboy limanoisam, the commandment to count them, happened only once. It happened in the second year from when they left Mitzrayim. Ha'inyan beruch niyosoy hu nitzchi. But still in all, the spiritual aspect of the census of this count is eternal. Bechol dor vador. And this is true, and this is the fact in every generation. V'yuvon b'zeh b'haktim lama hutzuchu Yisrael hishar b'midbar b'im shana. And we might understand this by prefacing and looking at why the Jews had to remain in the desert for 40 years. What were they doing in the desert for 40 years? Hein emes, it's true, sha'al yidei chet ha-meraglim, that because of the sin with the scouts, the meraglim that were sent to do reconnaissance and see what's going on in the land of Canaan before the Jews want to enter it. So it's true that because of this sin, nigzar aleihem shelo yikansu la'aretz arba'im shana. So there was a gezeira, there was an edict, that they shouldn't be able to enter into Eretz Yisrael for 40 years. Yom l'shana, yom l'shana. For every day of their sin, it took 40 days for them to come back with this really disparaging report about the land that Hashem had promised them and told them was going to be an amazing land, right? And the scouts came back with a very negative report and a disparaging report. So this took 40 days. And so there was a gezeira, there was an edict that they had to stay in the Midbar 1 year for every day, Yom L'Shana, Yom L'Shana, 1 day for every year. So it was 40 years. Hare ha'gzeira ha'yisarak b'negei l'chnisasam la'aretz Yisrael. So the gezeira was, it seems, only that they shouldn't be able to go into the land of Israel. They sinned in that they didn't want to go into the land, and therefore they were punished that they couldn't enter the land. And this is called mida keneged mida, measure for measure. So this is the way in which there's kind of reciprocity between what the sin is and what the punishment is. But the Rebbe asked the question, okay, fine. So they were punished, they couldn't go into the land. But they could have been for these 40 years in a place that was more built up. Shalom Eretz Yisrael, that wasn't Eretz Yisrael. Fine, they're not allowed to go into Eretz Yisrael. But does this have to, of necessity, translate into their remaining in a desert for 40 years? They could have been in another place, below the Midbar, and not in a desert. ubifrat. And specifically, the Rebbe brings down the description of this desert from Parshas Ekev, that it's a midbar, hagadol, v'hanora. It was a big desert. It was an awe-inspiring desert, but not in a positive way. It was dreadful. Nachash, Sarah, v'akra, v'tzimon, asher ein mayim. And there were snakes, and there were scorpions, and a third type of creature that's not friendly to people, and there wasn't water to drink. So why did they have to stay in this desert for 40 years? Okay, you don't merit to go into the land of Israel. I'll put you someplace else. I'll put you in some kind of holding pattern. The Inyan who, but the point here is, the concept is, Kimavor b'lekutei Torah, Reish Parsha Seinu, like the Alter Rebbe wrote in Lekutei Torah at the beginning of our Parsha, Shatam Nisi Asam Bamidbor, Im HaMishkan V'Kelav, that the reason for the Jews traveling in the Midbar, and I don't know about you, but there are certain like terms that just always drive me crazy, and one of those is the Jews wandering in the desert. And I try to do what I can to disabuse people of this idea that we were just like wandering with no GPS, like farblunget, like going around and around and around in circles, and that's not what happened. It was actually, you know, Hashem took us from place to place in very methodical fashion, and there was a GPS beferish. It was, you know, the Anane HaKavod, and at night it became a pillar of fire, and we weren't just wandering. But still, the Rebbe is asking, what was the point? And it brings down that the Alter Rebbe says that the reason for traveling in the Midbar with the Mishkan and the Kelim, Haya Kidei Lahachnia Koyach Yenikas Hachitzainim, that this wasn't just some type of, you know, you were bad, so now I'm going to put you in time out. You didn't want to go into my land that I have told you for so long that I'm going to take you into this land that is so wonderful and so beautiful and is the epicenter of holiness of the entire world. And you spurn that opportunity? Fine, I'm going to make you wander in the desert. So Alter Rebbe says, no. The point of their being in the desert was in order to subserviate, kidei lahachnia, to subserviate koach yinikas hachitzonim, the strength that gives succor to the negative energies of this world. Sheshorish yinikasam hu bamidbar dafka, because the source of that which nourishes and nurtures and vivifies negativity is found in the desert. And by the Jews traveling through the desert with the Mishkan and the Kelim, they were able to subserviate, to chisel away at the power that these negative energies have. The Yisera Mizu, and even more. Al Yedei Shechniwas Hachitzonim V'Hachoshech Hamastir. And through, again, abating the power of these deleterious and negative energies and the darkness that obfuscates godliness, hayu mamshichim gilui elokus. They were able to create a situation in which they could be mamshich, they could draw down the revelation of godliness. Uvichdei lif'ol zu zeh, and in order to effect this, therefore, they had to be in the Midbar for 40 years. So in other words, it's not that, like I said, okay, you were bad, I'm going to put you in a corner, I'm going to put you time out, I'm going to put you in the desert, and you're going to blunder there for 40 years. No, there was something very, very important that had to be accomplished that changed the spiritual landscape of this world due to their avoda of going through the desert with the Mishkan and the Kelim. Bipashtos, simply speaking, al yedei ma'asos b'nei Yisrael b'midbar, through their traveling in the Midbar, haya ha'anan horeg es hanachoshim v'hakrovim. Simply speaking, through their travels in the Midbar, the anane hakavod, the clouds of glory of Hashem, amongst the many things they did was that they killed the very dangerous snakes and scorpions. The gam hafchu es hamidbar lemakom yishuv. And by being in the Midbar, they transformed the Midbar, the desert, from a place of desolation to a place of inhabitants. Midbar nivdal mimakom yishuv b'ikar b'shnei inyanim. a desert is delineated or distinguished from a place that people habit, that people live in, usually through two basic things. Aleph, lo yashav adam sham. A midbar is a place where a person never lived or people don't live there. Yashav Adam Shah. And once you put 600,000 men between the ages of 20 and 60, so basically you're putting a few million people there, it becomes a place where people are living. It's no longer a place where nobody ever lived. And the second thing about a midbar is that the Eretz Lo Zarua. It's a place that is not, nothing ever gets planted there. Uvios B'nei Yisrael B'midbar. But the Rebbe brings down that when the Jews were in the midbar, Hayu Hamayim Mibeira Shel Miriam, the water from the well of Miriam, Magdilim Mine Disoim Bilanos La Ainsof. It allowed the growth of an infinite amount of grasses and trees. Okay, so it wasn't just that they drank from this well, but the well watered and irrigated the midbar, and it turned from a place that was an arid desert into a place of infinite blossoming. And this is also the reason, on a deeper level, on the innermost level, that the Levim, right, these families that we said were counted at the beginning of this week's parsha, these are the families of the Levim, and they were counted only when they reached the age of 30, and they were counted labodasam dinesias hamishkan v'kelav shal yadam hafchu as hamidbar l'eretz nosheves kinal. And this is the reason, this is the deeper reason for why the Levim were counted separately from the rest of Bnei Yisrael from the age of 30, because they were counted for their work of carrying the Mishkan and the Kelim. And it was through the agency of carrying the Kelim and the Mishkan that the Midbar was turned into a place of habitation. It was completely, completely transformed. Ki al yedei haminyan hameyuchad b'inyan zeh, nasu b'imyuchad b'zeh davar chashuv. Because the Rebbe brings down the idea that when you count something, it takes on distinction, or it takes on its own identity. V'lachein hamidbar lo yifol aleihem, and therefore the midbar could not affect them. In other words, we're saying that by going through the midbar, they transformed the midbar, they affected the midbar, they changed the midbar. But why were they not affected? Through the count, ki davar shebeminyan lo batel, because there's a rule that when you count something, when you distinguish it from something else, it can't become batel, it can't become obliterated, it can't become null and void. Va'adraba, on the contrary, hein yehavchu oso la'aretz nosheves. They have the koch, they get the strength to change the midbar into a place of habitation. Now the Rebbe takes us further on this journey, and he says, how does this relate to us? Okay, so basically the Rebbe has taken something which seems very dry and very kind of not relevant, right? A census, the counting. This family had this amount of people, this family had this amount of people. All right, you know, tell me something more inspiring, right? And the Rebbe says, no. What's going on here is very, very, very important. They were counted in order to distinguish them. They were distinguished for the purpose of carrying the Mishkan and the Kelim. The purpose of carrying the Mishkan and the Kelim was to completely transform the Midbar. And what was happening by doing this, they were completely subserviating, if not obviating, the power of the negativity and creating an environment in this world where it could become, godly, could become the world that Hashem wanted. And in Yin Zeh, and this concept, this idea, this avoda, La'asos mimidbar eretz nosheves, to take from a place that is arid and desolate and to make it a habitable land, v'hakoach al zeh, and the power to do this, milmaila al yidei hatzibui limanosam, and the power that flowed from God, from above, to do this through Hashem's commandment that they be counted, hu inyan nitzri bechol dar vadar. This concept is an eternal concept in every generation. And in parentheses, the Rebbe says, kechol hanyanim shebetorah, like every single inyan in the Torah. There's no pasuk, there's no concept that's just kind of like, you know, filling space. And how is this? Kishem isbainin ha'adam b'hasviva b'ahu nimtza. When a person looks around and they start to analyze or ruminate on their environment, lifamim hikazu sheyira shehu b'pchinas midbar shelo yashav adam ha'elyon sham. Sometimes a person could come to the conclusion that he's living in a place which is like a desolate desert, spiritually, that no person, and the Rebbe inserts in parentheses, Adam Ha'elyon, which is Hashem. It seems like, God forbid, there could be a place, it seems where God has never been there. I don't remember who it was that corrected me, but I once used the term God forsaken, and somebody came over to me and said, you should never use that term because it can't be that there's a place that is forsaken by God. But sometimes it could feel like we're in a place where, you know, no man's land. And the Rebbe says, Adam Ha'elyon, right? Ki rov b'nei Adam b'svivasoi. Because most of the people in his environment don't know much about godliness, Adam Elyon, the supernal God, the supernal man after which we are all fashioned. The Ela Hayodim, and those that do know, the Ela Hamisorim Lisanik Kifi Hairaz HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'Torah, and those that become aroused to live their life in consonance with God's Hira, help me here, somebody. What Hashem tells us to do.
So instruction.
So it seems like there. Most people don't know anything about Hashem, and those that do know, and those that are aroused to live their lives in consonance with what Hashem wants. Hare ein tzadik ba'aretz asher yaseh tov v'lo yechta. But still, there's no person who will only do good and not do bad. So in other words, okay, yeah, there are some people that are kind of inspired and aroused to do the right thing, basically, but nobody's 100%. And here the Rebbe says, Al kalpanim yachzer kidboi lemevet shetzarech liyos. And then there are people who maybe they're doing all the right things, but they're not doing as much as they should be doing for who they are. And here the Rebbe brings down, I mean, this is a reference to an interesting story in the Gemara, so I just wanted to share it with you. And okay, so here it is. So the Gemara asks about a story that's brought down about the daughter of Nakhdima ben Gurion. And in that story, it seems that Nakhdima ben Gurion, and this is, you can look at the footnote, you can see that this Ksuba is 66b, Nakhdima ben Gurion, it says, didn't give tzedakah. And the Gemara says, but what? How can you say that? But isn't it taught elsewhere that they used to say about Nakhdima ben Gurion that when he left his house to go to study in the Beis Medrash, he would have fine woolen garments spread under him for him to walk on. So he was a very, very wealthy individual. And when he left his house to go learn, he would have these fine garments spread under him. And then afterwards, the poor would come, they would fold them up and they would take them. So every time he left his house to go study, you know, people could come and take these woolen garments. And this was very, very valuable. So how could you say about him that he didn't give tzedakah? So the Gemara answers two things. Either that he did this for his own honor, or the Gemara brings down the words that the Rebbe here said, that he did not do as much as he should have done. In other words, for Nakhdima ben Gurion, this wasn't enough. It's true that people benefited, and people could feel that they could take this and they didn't have to steal. And it was, you know, it was like going to waste. So it was not a, it was kind of a dignified way to get something very, very valuable. But still, this was not considered enough. So the Rebbe says that sometimes when you look around, you could think that you're living in a midbar. Either there's people who know nothing about God, or there are those that do, but either they're, you know, they do some good things, some not so good things, or you have those that are doing, but nothing compared to what they should do. And based on this, you feel that you find yourself in a desert where no person has ever been. Because the supernal man, Hashem, is not there in a way of hityashvus. He's not there in a constant, settled way. Kvius. Kvius means when you set something, you set it up constantly. And the person who's trying really to serve Hashem might fall into a situation of sadness and despondency and even, God forbid, kind of give up. He might be kind of catapulted into throwing away his to those who are poor in his own town. So this is a concept in tzedakah, that when it comes to giving tzedakah, there's a hierarchy. And you're supposed to give to aniye ircha kodem. You're supposed to give to the poor people in your town before you give to poor people of another town. Before you give to poor people in your own town, you're supposed to give to your family members and so on and so forth. And this is a whole other discussion that's very interesting, because sometimes people have a tendency to give to tzedakahs that are not close by because it's kind of more exciting, or there's something about it that kind of excites them. And the halacha says, no, you actually have a responsibility to kind of your inner orbit before you start zooming out. But the Rebbe says spiritually, a person might, when they look around and they kind of assess where they live and what's going on around them, they might just throw in the towel regarding the shlichus that they have to the poor, the spiritually poor people in their own town, and they want to run somewhere else. It's difficult. They don't want to deal with the spiritual desolation of the part of the midbar that they find themselves. So the Rebbe says, so here comes the lesson. Here comes the lesson that we have to travel in the midbar that we find ourselves, and we have to change it, and we have to transform it, just like the Jews traveled in the midbar in our parsha. Their traveling in the midbar then was in consonance with Hashem's command. And they transformed the midbar into a place of habit, of habitation, of a place where people live. This is true for each Jew. This is true for each one of us. Bechol hazmanim. In every time, shebechol makom shehu nimtza, in every place that he is found, gam im hamakom hu midbar shamam, even if you feel like you're found in a desert that is desolate, hare hayayse sham hu loy b'mikre chas v'shalom ela b'shlichus shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Very, very strong words. He doesn't find himself there by happenstance. Chas v'shalom. This is the shlichus from the Eibishter that you belong there. Even though when you look around, you feel hopeless and you feel like, what am I ever going to be able to accomplish? And I'm in a midbar. No, this is your shlichus from the Eibishter. Me Hashem mitzadei gaver kainanu. All of our steps are prepared by the Eibishter. The Eibishter prepares where we go, where we're going to end up, what place we're going to be visiting, what place we're going to live in. Why? In order for us to transform it through our avoda. And what do we have to transform it into? L'makom moshav adam ha'elyon. To a place where people can live. But now you see what the Rebbe is doing with Adam. He's saying, a place that will be habitable for Adam Elyon, for the supernal man, for Hashem, basically to make this into a Dir Lo Yisbarach, which is the salient cry that runs through every aspect of the Rebbe's Torah. And then the Rebbe says, and then when you look at what the Rambam wrote, "V'lo shevet Levi bilvad ella kol ish v'ish," that it's not just shevet Levi that had the schus to be involved in the aveda of the Mishkan. Really, it's every person asher nadva ruchay eisei, that when his spirit moves him and he wants to serve God, he bade la'amay lifnei Hashem l'sharsa, to separate himself from the physical, the material, the corporeal, and to stand before Hashem and to serve him. Then every person can do this avodah, and then Hashem becomes his portion and his inheritance. And this is a reference to the fact that when the Jews went into Eretz Yisrael, the Levim, Shevet Levi, did not get a portion of the land, because Hashem hu nachalasam, because Hashem is their inheritance. But the Rambam says, every person who wants to comport themselves this way, they can also act this way. K'mo shezacha l'kayhanim l'levim. Harei kol echad ve'echad b'im rak yinadei b'ruchay eisai. If it's only that the person has to resolve that this is how they want to live. They just have to have their spirit move them that this is what they want to do. Lahayres drachav hayisharim mishpatav hasadikim l'rabim. To teach the ways of Hashem, to teach the straight ways of Hashem and the righteous statutes of Hashem to many, many people. And then if a person resolves to do this, yutan loy milmala hakayach b'hachashivus ad she'enu batal. Then Hashem gives him from above the effulence, the strength. And just like the Rebbe said, that what was the idea of there being counted? That when you count something, it takes on chashivos, it takes on a certain level of import. It becomes something that can't become nullified. So too, when a person decides that this is what they want to do, then the Eibishter gives them, God gives them the kayach, the strength, and the distinction and the importance, ad she'ena batal, until they cannot be nullified. In other words, if they decide that this is what they want to do, then they will transform, and they will not, on the contrary, be transformed by what they confront. Umidarga ledarga, and they'll go from one level to another. Dibnei Gershon nasa es reish gam nisias reish betziruf legadol himenu. So there's different levels in this. Just like when they counted the levim, there were different levels and different families. Ba'ad ledarga dibnei kahas nasa es reish b'fnei atzmai, until you get to the level of nikah. And when you go from strength to strength, you go from level to level in the counting, as it were. And remember, the word nasai means to count, but it also means to lift up, right? To be elevated. And when you go from level to level in this counting, in this elevation, you will have more and more strength to make of the midbar that you find yourself, to make it into a Dir Lo Yisbarach, to make this into an abode for Hashem. And ha'ira ha'mura shayeches higam la'vaydes ha'adam im atzmai. So this is again a recurring theme in the Rebbe's Torah, that there's a vayda im hazulas, there's what you have to do with somebody else, and there's a vayda im atzmai, there's what you have to do for yourself. And these are not mutually exclusive. And I think that probably everybody feels the same way, that whatever we do with somebody else or for somebody else, we are the ones who gain the most. But still in all, there is a distinction between what we at least officially believe to be for somebody else, or in some way seems to be for somebody else, and what we have to do with ourselves. And the Rebbe now addresses this. Kishadam oisech cheshbon tzedek mimasha avar alav. When a person takes spiritual inventory and thinks about everything that's happened to him. Lifamim, sometimes, hasach hakol, the sum total, Sometimes when a person kind of does a reckoning, they might come to the conclusion that that their behavior was kind of like a desert. It was arid. There weren't many beautiful, healthy things growing from it. And a person can become despondent. A person can become depressed. When he thinks, how will I ever be able to change my behavior? It's hard when you look at yourself and you see that you do certain things over and over and over, and you think to yourself, how am I ever going to be able to change? And especially when you do certain things over and over and over again, it almost becomes like something you're allowed to do. Like, even though in some objective part of your mind, you know that this is not something you're supposed to do, but when you do it so often, it kind of becomes like something that you believe you are allowed to do. Especially if you did it more than twice. What if you did it more than 200 times? You know, it just becomes the habit. The hergel nasa teva. And then what is habit becomes your nature, becomes who you are. This is what you do. And you start to look at yourself and you're like, I'm never going to be able to change this. This has been going on for years and years, decades and decades. I'm stuck in this pattern. The Rebbe says, to answer this question comes the lesson. Just like the B'nai Levi, they were only counted and they were only inducted into their service with the Mishkan when they were 30 years old. Until then, they did not do service with the Mishkan. Notwithstanding this fact, nitan lahem hakayach va'ad lenasei esreish shemeaz v'hala yiyu noisei hamishkan. Even though for 30 years before that they were not involved with this, but at that point they were given the strength until they were actually elevated. And from that time, they were the ones that carried the Mishkan. And like we said earlier, through carrying the Mishkan through the Midbar, they will transform the Midbar. And we know that this happened. This all happened in real time. This you know, wasn't just like an idea. It wasn't just a theory. It actually happened. And the Rebbe says, "Kain hu b'kol echad v'echad." And this is true for each one of us. Shemibli habat al matzavei adachshav, that without looking at what happened until now, be'im yachalit shemikan ulahaba yamay lufnei Hashem l'shersay ulaavdei, if we will decide that from now going further, we will stand before Hashem to serve Him, to minister and to serve Him, yutan loy hakayach letaharis atzmai, we will be given the strength from above to purify ourselves. The es begadav, and here the Rebbe again is alluding to something much deeper. He says, and also when the Levim were inducted, they also had to purify their clothing. But this is an allusion to the aspects of the soul that are expressed through the, you know, our speech and our action and our thought, the begadim. In other words, that will be given the power from above to be purified, to become more refined, that every aspect of ourselves become more refined. Mikol henyanim habilti ritzuyim shahaya ba'avar, will be cleansed of all the things that were not so positive, that we're not so wanted, that happened in the past. B'yosim b'midbar, when we were in a midbar. So in other words, the Rebbe is not really giving us too much of a way out. Because if we want to say, you know, we're just beyond repair, look at us. Look at what's been happening for so many years. The Rebbe says, all you have to do is actually resolve that from now going forward, you want to become one of the B'nai Levi. You want to serve. You really want to stand before Hashem and minister to Hashem. And then Hashem will give you the strength to do this and will help you to refine all the aspects of yourself. Ulahamshich gilui elokus b'nafshei, and to continue revealing godliness in your soul. Va'alav yomar, and about this person will be said, b'shachanti b'seichem, b'seichem, liyos mishkan lo yisbarach, right? We're all familiar with the fact that it doesn't say b'shachanti b'seichai. When Hashem says, I want a mishkan, it doesn't say, and I will reside within it. It says, I will reside among you, which means that Hashem wants to reside within each one of us. And that will happen from our strong resolve to want to become that person. And now the Rebbe continues that in order to do this, so let's get practical. So in order that the person and his environment should become a dir lo yisbarach, an abode for Hashem, the work that has to be done, the spiritual work that has to be done in our inner landscape, it's a binary. It has to be done in two ways. Desor meira, we have to desist from that which is negative, which is bad. V'da'ase tov, and we have to do what's proper. And the Rebbe says, u'bedugmas melech basar adam. And imagine, he gives us a metaphor. Imagine there's a king and you want to remodel the palace. Kishareisim l'takin l'dira, you want to perfect and you want to fix up his place, his palace. First, you have to clean out all the stuff that's dirty and all the stuff that's not appropriate. And then you bring in the beautiful furniture and the furnishings and the interiors and the curtains, etc., etc. And so it is in making the house for Hashem. You need to have both of these aspects. You have to take out kind of the stuff that's not good, and then we have to bring in the stuff that is good. We have to, sur meira means veer from that which is bad, and do good. And this too, this binary, this dual approach to changing ourselves, transforming ourselves, is also alluded to in this week's parsha, where it talks about the Bnei Gershon, Bnei Kahas, who were the carriers of the Mishkan. Because Gershon, who miloshon Gerushin, Gershon is etymologically rooted in the word for to divorce, to separate, to go away from. So this is the idea of sor meira, to separate, to divorce, to desist from what's negative, what's bad. Ukahas, and the name kahas, hu miloshon velav yikas amim. Velu yikas amim. Asifas v'kibbutz. The word kahas is etymologically rooted in the idea of gathering. In Yanim Hatovim, gathering good things together, which is the idea of Ase Tov. And just like Gershon is older than Kahas, he was born chronologically before Kahas. This is also true in our spiritual service. First, we have to desist from those things that are negative. We have to take out the stuff that's in the palace or whatever we're trying to remodel. First, you got to take out the garbage. You have to take out the stuff that's an impediment, that's blocking, that doesn't allow you to see the beauty of the space. And then you bring in this is just like when you bring in the beautiful furnishings after you clean out the hechal, the space from that which is dirty and not becoming. And the Rebbe finishes off. Masa b'nei Gershon, l'masa b'nei Kahas, and we can further understand the service of desisting from that which is negative, and then doing good, by the difference between what Gershon carried, and what the family, the children of Kohath, carried. B'nei Gershon nasu es yirias ha-mishkan. The family of Gershon carried the curtains of the Mishkan. Masha enkein b'nei Kohath nasu klei ha-mishkan. The children of Kohath carried the actual kelim of the Mishkan, the arayin, the two different mizbeches, etc., arayin, hashulchan, the table, and what's the difference between the curtains of the Mishkan and the kelim and the vessels of the Mishkan? Because the purpose of the curtains is to surround and to protect. That's what the Urias did. Masha inkin hakelim, in contradistinction, the vessels. Each one of the vessels has its own distinct service, its own what it has to accomplish. The Aron was all about giving testimony to the fact that the Torah is what defines the world. The Shulchan reminds us that all of our physical sustenance comes from above. Each one of the kelim has a very, very specific Aveda, a very specific thing to teach us. But the Urias were in most general form something that protected us. Vinyanim ba'aveda. And the same is true when you understand this. Okay, so the Rebbe takes every physical thing and teaches you what this means figuratively but practically in our spiritual Aveda. So Sur Meira, the negative aspect of veering away or desisting or separating or divorcing oneself from that which is negative. Magina ala adam mea asur alav umazikai. Plain, simply put, it protects the person from that which is forbidden to him and would harm him. And this right now, going right back full circle to what the Rebbe started with. That when we say that the Eibishter looked into the Torah and created the world, it is exactly that, that anything that is asur will harm us. We're not doing anyone a favor by staying away from that which we're not allowed to do. If the Torah says don't do it, it's because it's harmful to you and not just on some spiritual level. And asay toiv, asiyas mitzvah shehem edus, Yad hamichalek estaka nasis merkava mamish. And the Rebbe says, and on the other hand, each mitzvah that we do, that is testimony to who we are and what we are and why we are. And the Rebbe says, for example, the hand that distributes staka becomes merkava mamish. A merkava literally means a chariot, but in Hasidus, Merkava is just like a chariot. It has no agenda of its own. It can't decide to get up in the morning, I'm going to Montreal. The Merkava can't go anywhere, right? It needs to be pulled by the driver. So the same way, the hand that you give tzedakah with becomes a Merkava mamash. It literally becomes a Merkava to godliness. It becomes something that loses its own agenda and becomes abnegated in the agenda of Hashem. And through these two services, staying away from what we're not supposed to do and doing what we are supposed to do, then we're able to create the Mishkan, the tabernacle, the holy place for Hashem, v'dir lo yizbarach, and a boat for Hashem, v'shlei musay, in its fullness. So Hashem should help us that we should be able to do that. And learning about it is the first step to doing what we have to do. Thank you so much, everybody, for this opportunity. Anybody, questions, anything you want to share, say, talk about more?
I have a question.
Everybody have a wonderful day. And Kol Tov till next week. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nikki.
Thank you, Rifki.
Thank you, Rifki.
Thank you very much.